Chapter 16. Flavor of the word. More than she felt the weight of the fact. Effie's a perfect child. She's more like my son, perhaps, than dear Owen. She'll never intentionally give me the least trouble. But of course the responsibility will be great. I'm not sure I should dare to undertake it, if it were not for her having such a treasure of a governess. Has Anna told you about our little governess? After all the worry we had last year, with one impossible creature after another, it seems providential, just now, to have found her. At first we were afraid she was too young, but now we've the greatest confidence in her. So clever and amusing and such a lady. I don't say her education's all it might be. No drawing or singing, but one can't have everything, and she speaks Italian. Madame de Chantel's fond insistence on the likeness between Effie Leith and her father, if not particularly gratifying to Darrow, had at least increased his desire to see the little girl. It gave him an odd feeling of discomfort to think that she should have any of the characteristics of the late Fraser Leith. He had, somehow, fantastically pictured her as the mystical offspring of the early tenderness between himself and Anna Summers. His encounter with Effie took place the next morning, on the lawn below the terrace, where he found her, in the early sunshine, knocking about golf balls with her brother. Almost at once, and with infinite relief, he saw that the resemblance of which Madame de Chantel boasted was mainly external. Even that discovery was slightly distasteful, though Darrow was forced to own that Fraser Leith's straight-featured fairness had lent itself to the production of a peculiarly finished image of childish purity. But it was evident that other elements had also gone to the making of Effie, and that another spirit sat in her eyes. Her serious handshake, her ready greeting, were worthy of the Leith tradition, and he guessed her to be more malleable than Owen, more subject to the influences of Giver, but the shout with which she returned to her rompat in at the note of her mother's emancipation. He had begged a holiday for her, and when Mrs. Leith appeared he and she, and the little girl went off for a ramble. Anna wished her daughter to have time to make friends with Darrow before learning in what relation he was to stand to her, and the three roamed the woods and fields till the distant chime of the stable clock made them turn back for luncheon. Effie, who was attended by a shaggy terrier, had picked up two or three subordinate dogs at the stable, and as she trotted on ahead with her yapping escort, Anna hung back to throw a look at Darrow. Yes, he answered it, she's exquisite. Oh, I see what I'm asking of you. But she'll be quite happy here, won't she? And you must remember it won't be for long. Anna sighed her acquiescence. She'll be happy here. It's her nature to be happy. She'll apply herself to it, conscientiously, as she does to her lessons, and to what she calls being good. In a way, you see, that's just what worries me. Her idea of being good is to please the person she's with. She puts her whole dear little mind on it. And so, if ever she's with the wrong person, but surely there's no danger of that just now? Madame de Chantel tells me that you've at last put your hand on the perfect governess. Anna, without answering, glanced away from him toward her daughter. It's lucky, at any rate, Darrow continued, that Madame de Chantel thinks her so. Oh, I think very highly of her too. Highly enough to feel quite satisfied to leave her with Effie? Yes. She's just the person for Effie. Only, of course, one never knows. She's young, and she might take it into her head to leave us. After a pause she added, I'm naturally anxious to know what you think of her. When they entered the house the hands of the hall clock stood within a few minutes of the luncheon hour. Anna led Effie off to have her hair smoothed, and Darrow wandered into the oak sitting room, which he found untenanted. The sun lay pleasantly on its brown walls, on the scattered books and the flowers in old porcelain vases. In his eyes lingered the vision of the dark-haired mother mounting the stairs with her little fair daughter. The contrast between them seemed a last touch of grace in the complex harmony of things. He stood in the window, looking out at the park, and brooding inwardly upon his happiness. Dot dot, he was roused by Effie's voice, and the scamper of her feet down the long floors behind him. Here he is! Here he is! She cried, flying over the threshold. He turned and stooped to her with a smile, and as she caught his hand he perceived that she was trying to draw him toward someone who had paused behind her in the doorway, and whom he supposed to be her mother. Here he is! Effie repeated, with her sweet impatience. The figure in the doorway came forward and Darrow, looking up, found himself face to face with Sophie Viner. They stood still, a yard or two apart, and looked at each other without speaking. As they paused there, a shadow fell across one of the terrace windows, and Owen Leaf stepped whistling into the room. In his rough shooting clothes, with the glow of exercise under his fair skin, he looked extraordinarily light-hearted and happy. Darrow, with a quick side glance, noticed this, and perceived also that the glow on the youth's cheek had deepened suddenly to red. He too stopped short, and the three stood there motionless for a barely perceptible beat of time. During its lapse, Darrow's eyes had turned back from Owen's face to that of the girl between them. He had the sense that, whatever was done, it was he who must do it, and that it must be done immediately. He went forward, and held out his hand. How do you do, Miss Viner? She answered, colon, how do you do? In a voice that sounded clear and natural, and the next moment he again became aware of steps behind him, and knew that Mrs. Leaf was in the room. To his strained senses there seemed to be another just measurable pause before Anna said, looking gaily about the little group, colon, has Owen introduced you? This is Effie's friend, Miss Viner. Effie, still hanging on her governess's arm, pressed herself closer with a little gesture of appropriation, and Miss Viner laid her hand on her pupil's hair. Darrow felt that Anna's eyes had turned to him. I think Miss Viner and I have met already several years ago in London. I remember, said Sophie Viner, in the same clear voice. How charming! Then we're all friends. But luncheon must be ready, said Mrs. Leaf. She turned back to the door, and the little procession moved down the two long drawing rooms, with Effie waltzing on ahead. XV, Madame de Chantel and Anna had planned, for the afternoon, a visit to a remotely situated acquaintance whom the introduction of the motor had transformed into a neighbor. Effie was to pay for her morning's holiday by an hour or two in the schoolroom, and Owen suggested that he and Darrow should betake themselves to a distant covert in the desultory quest for pheasants. Darrow was not an ardent sportsman, but any pretext for physical activity would have been acceptable at the moment, and he was glad both to get away from the house and not to be left to himself. When he came downstairs the motor was at the door, and Anna stood before the hall mirror, swathing her hat in veils. She turned at the sound of his step, and smiled at him for a long full moment. I'd no idea you knew Miss Viner, she said, as he helped her into her long coat. It came back to me, luckily, that I'd seen her two or three times in London, several years ago. She was secretary, or something of the sort, in the background of a house, where I used to dine. He loathed the slighting indifference of the phrase, but he had uttered it deliberately, had been secretly practicing it all through the interminable hour at the luncheon table. Now that it was spoken, he shivered at its note of condescension. In such cases one was almost sure to overdo. Dot dot, but Anna seemed to notice nothing unusual. Was she really? You must tell me all about it. Tell me exactly how she struck you. I'm so glad it turns out that you know her. No is rather exaggerated. We used to pass each other on the stairs. Madame de Chantel and Owen appeared together as he spoke, and Anna, gathering up her wraps, said, colon, you'll tell me about that then. Try and remember everything you can. As he tramped through the woods at his young host's side, Darrow felt the partial relief from thought produced by exercise and the obligation to talk. Little as he cared for shooting, he had the habit of concentration which makes it natural for a man to throw himself wholly into whatever business he had in hand, and there were moments of the afternoon when they suddenly were in the undergrowth. A vivider gleam against the hazy browns and grays of the woods was enough to fill the foreground of his attention. But all the while, behind these voluntarily emphasized sensations, his secret consciousness continued to revolve on a loud wheel of thought. For a time it seemed to be sweeping him through deep gulfs of darkness. His sensations were too swift and swarming to be disentangled. He had an almost physical sense of struggling for air, of battling helplessly with material obstructions, as though the russet covert through which he trudged were the heart of a maleficent jungle. Snatches of his companion's talk drifted to him intermittently through the confusion of his thoughts. He caught eager self-revealing phrases, and understood that Owen was saying things about himself, perhaps hinting indirectly at the hopes for which Darrow had been prepared by Anna's confidences. He had already become aware that the lad liked him, and had meant to take the first opportunity of showing that he reciprocated the feeling. But the effort of fixing his attention on Owen's words was so great that it left no power for more than the briefest and most inexpressive replies. Young Leith, it appeared, felt that he had reached a turning point in his career, a height from which he could impartially survey his past progress and projected endeavor. At one time he had had musical and literary yearnings, visions of desultory artistic indulgence. But these had of late been superseded by the resolute determination to plunge into practical life. "I don't want, you see," Darrow heard him explaining, "to drift into what my grandmother, poor dear, is trying to make of me. An adjunct of giver. I don't want hang at all. To slip into collecting sensations as my father collected snuff boxes. I want Effie to have giver. It's my grandmother's, you know, to do as she likes with, and I've understood lately that, if it belonged to me, it would gradually gobble me up. I want to get out of it, into a life that's big and ugly and struggling. If I can extract beauty out of that, so much the better. That'll prove my vocation. But I want to make beauty, not be drowned in the ready-made, like a bee in a pot of honey." Darrow knew that he was being appealed to for corroboration of these views, and for encouragement in the course to which they pointed. To his own ears his answer sounded now curt, now irrelevant. At one moment he seemed chillingly indifferent, at another he heard himself launching out on a flood of hazy discursiveness. He dared not look at Owen, for fear of detecting the lad's surprise at these senseless transitions. And through the confusion of his inward struggles and outward loquacity he heard the ceaseless trip hammer beat of the question : what in God's name shall I do? To get back to the house before Anna's return seemed his most pressing necessity. He did not clearly know why. He simply felt that he ought to be there. At one moment it occurred to him that Miss Viner might want to speak to him alone, and again, in the same flash, that it would probably be the last thing she would want. At any rate, he felt he ought to try to speak to her, or at least, be prepared to do so, if the chance should occur. Finally, toward 4, he told his companion that he had some letters on his mind, and must get back to the house, and dispatch them before the ladies returned. He left Owen with the beater, and walked onto the edge of the covert. At the park gates he struck obliquely through the trees, following a grass avenue at the end, of which he had caught a glimpse of the roof of the chapel. A gray haze had blotted out the sun, and the still air clung about him tepidly. At length the house front raised before him its expanse of damp silvered brick, and he was struck afresh by the high decorum of its calm lines and soberly massed surfaces. It made him feel, in the turbid coil of his fears and passions, like a muddy tramp forcing his way into some pure sequestered shrine. By and by, he knew, he should have to think the complex horror out, slowly, systematically, bit by bit. But for the moment it was whirling him about so fast that he could just clutch at its sharp spikes and be tossed off again. Only, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.